how are we going to live the rest of it out? And I think being able to have the gift of saying, okay, your life's fucking destroyed now. Like, it's on the floor. Which bits do you want to pick up, and how are you going to put it back together? In what image? And that's where I've been, is looking at those pieces, picking them up and saying, okay, how can I, in the most healthy way, take these forward on a journey that I want to be a part of?
Hi, welcome to the Growth Mixtape Podcast, and I'm your host, Bob Mathers. We have one rule here. We're going to chase our curiosity way outside our comfort zones. The more uncomfortable and awkward, the better. We're going to talk to people you've never heard of doing jobs you didn't know existed. We're going to hear human stories about the things that connect us, what we can learn from one another, and what we can take away to apply to our own lives. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first, but just like songs on a mixtape, you create something memorable and emotional. Today we talked to Carl Allen Muncy, a tech innovator, motorcycle enthusiast, and now a real-life Instagram influencer. Now, when I talked to Carl about being on the podcast, I wasn't sure what we'd talk about. He's a motorcycle guy who talks about throttle therapy and the mental health benefits of riding, and I've never been on a motorcycle. I was always scared, and I was never that cool. But it turns out this conversation isn't really about motorcycles at all. Carl was a big success in every way. A fancy job working with huge companies, a big house, he had it all. Then during the pandemic, all that fell apart. His marriage, his job, and with it, everything he thought he knew about himself. So we started over, and he did what so many of us long to do at some point in our lives. He took all his unique superpowers that he's amassed over his career, and he pointed them in a new direction, something he really cares about. Now, if you think this sounds like a fairy tale, it's not. Carl is very honest about how painful this was. Now he's an Instagram influencer, a middle-aged motorcycle dude in black leather, gray beard, baring his soul and being vulnerable about his mental health. And yeah, his audience is exploding. So sure, if you like riding, you're gonna love this. But maybe you're like me and you've never been on a bike. Maybe you think reinventing yourself is something only other people do. This conversation will change that. Please enjoy Carl Allen Muncy.
All right, Carl, I'm excited for this conversation. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this all day. This is genuinely the highlight of my day. Thanks, Bob.
So we're going to talk about some things that I never thought might go together. We're going to talk about some mental health things, some motorcycle things, some Instagram things.
Yeah.
Kind of things that I never would have put together. So I'm excited about that. You've also seemed to have carved out this life, at least online, that is like, it's kind of like what we're all trying to do, right? You've combined your passion and your business, but I know it hasn't been that easy. So I'm really excited to get into the journey. So many different avenues rabbit holes we can go down.
Oh, I'm excited for it. We can go wherever you want. There's a lot going on. I'm a complicated guy, but we'll get to the content, I'm sure.
Why don't we start a little bit about how you got here? You don't sound like you're from around here. So where did you grow up?
Oh, I'm from New Brunswick originally. I'm from central London. I grew up just outside of London in a very kind of rough, sketchy part of London, for want of a better term. And anyone that lives there knows it is. So, and then from there, I kind of graduated and kind of went into central London. I actually set up an IT company when I was 19 in central London. So I spent a lot of my career kind of slogging it out in the big smoke, so to speak. But yes, I came to, I actually sold the company in England. I moved to Australia, stayed there for, I think about 3 years or so. And then I came to Canada. I've been here for a little over 15 years now. So I like to say I'm genetically anchored here. Now that I have kids, I'm stuck.
You're a bit of a serial entrepreneur. Have you had like any real jobs? Or you mentioned that business that you started in the UK. Has it always been that?
Yeah, it has for the majority. And the time I've actually found myself working for others only came after what looks on paper to be a modicum of success. So I had a design and marketing agency here that I ran for a good number of years. And it was great. You know, you have the freedom, but also all of the stress of running your own businesses. And I'd been self-employed, like I say, since I was 19. So post acquisition, which was very much an acqui-hire, really, for myself and the team, that was when I kind of started working for other people, really. And, you know, I'd had jobs along the way. You know, a lot of us kind of dive in and out of jobs when you're in those early stages of entrepreneurship. But then, you know, after, they call it the golden handcuffs period, you know, if you're contracted for a period of time, I went into working with a great company. And, you know, I think we'll get into the ins and outs of what drives us passionately in business. And I was actually working with a 100-year-old family business that had adapted and augmented over the years. So I got to do some great stuff with them, but really kind of learn about those kind of more established businesses. And from there, I left there and I ended up setting up innovation labs for other massive corporations and really got a big lick of that kind of corporate candy, so to speak, which is, you know, the money's great, but the stresses and all of that stuff are very different.
For people that don't know what an innovation lab is, how do you describe that?
Yeah, so an innovation lab, for the most part, they're these organizations or rooms of people that take and identify challenges and opportunities and then kind of rapid prototype or MVP, like minimum viable product, a solution to it. So once you've identified what 100% of a problem looks like or an opportunity looks like, you can build or rapid prototype 100% of a solution and see what that looks like. Those are really put through these things called innovation labs. So we build these groups of people, very talented facilitators a lot of the time and developers. And we really kind of engage with, if we're on the peripheral of an organization, it's normally like the cool kids in a, you know, an incubator accelerator type environment. They set up these groups of people and then we go in and we interview people that work in different departments. You know, what would make your job easier? What would what looks like a product opportunity for you? Is there something you think that we should have as a company that we don't? And then we then go and do a whole bunch of kind of testing and work out if it's viable, if it's a real challenge or a real opportunity, and then build it. And then, you know, the big difficulty comes when you're trying to, what we call, commercialize innovation. How do we actually take this cool widget app product we built and how do we commercialize it through the red tape of our existing structure and organization? So, yeah, innovation labs can serve many, many purposes and they're extremely valuable. But there's also the bullshit side, right? There's the innovation theater side. We're a big, rich company. Let's prove and show that we're doing cool things. Just make us look good. And then you kind of get these innovation labs with bean bags and very little substance to them. So, yeah, it goes the full gamut.
Yeah, I love that. The pandemic changed things for a lot of people. And so how did it affect you?
Great question. Yeah, and really interesting segue because it kind of brings the story to quite a current state. So I was very lucky. I had some phenomenal Innovation Lab jobs. So I set up the Innovation Lab for Post Media, which is Canada's largest news media agency. We did some phenomenal stuff in there. Then I set up the City of Kitchener's Innovation Lab, very different mandate, very different set of problems, opportunities, not problems, challenges. Let's use the word challenges. So civic innovation there. And then I moved over to Halifax for 6 months and set up the Halifax Innovation Outpost. Once again, very different mandate. And so on. But that contract came to an end the same time that COVID was kicking off and super just changing everything. So I came back to Ontario. And the truth of the matter is a lot of these innovation labs had dried up. You know, the beauty of them is that they're on the peripheral of a lot of these organizations, right? They're on the outside. They're doing speculative work, you know, where what is a challenge? What is an opportunity? And everyone knows, like, during that time, professionally, it was so unpredictable. So innovation labs, a lot of them either shut down, got internalized, and the jobs just weren't there, truth be told. So I came back from having these phenomenal positions and these great labs to ultimately no work during one of the most difficult times in business. So really, it affected me profoundly. But, and I was going through some personal challenges. I was going through a divorce at the same time. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of separation stuff going on. So my emotional and personal stress was very high. My professional stress was very high at a stage where no one could also find work. So it was a very complicated time in my life, but one that I've fortunately, thanks to hindsight and a lot of therapy, been able to, you know, build a lot of personal growth and learn a lot of personal kind of truths from, really. It's been a difficult but transformative time.
God, I love that, Carl. What's the biggest thing you took away from therapy?
The big one is, if you know, there's an arsehole in every room. And if you look around the room and can't see the arsehole, it's you. I was an arsehole. And I had such a big ego, and I had so many things that, you know, I often say, I worked this hard to be this lucky. And I did. I worked really hard to get to a stage in my life where I was afforded some beautiful opportunities. And my career was incredibly good. And I had so many successes, you know, on paper and off, I guess, that my career gave me. But that kind of period of complete dysfunction, complete out of my comfort zone, made me look at myself and made me look at, what do I want from life? What do I need to change and adapt about myself? And the therapy and a lot of the personal growth journey that I've been on has really been about learning who I am. And honestly, I think one of the reasons I hid behind my career, I hid behind my ego, I hid behind being the party guy and drinking and socializing and being the extrovert guy. And there were so many positives that come out of all of that stuff. You can stand on a stage and talk about anything and, you know, stand in front of a room of people. But when shit goes south and, you know, you've only got yourself in the mirror to kind of work through your problems with, you get to work stuff out pretty damn quickly. And I realized that there was a lot of work that I needed to do. And, you know, take alcohol for one reason. It's one of the reasons I would drink so much, because I couldn't sleep and stuff, is because I really didn't want to be alone with myself, I think, is the truth of it. So once I'd actually done a lot of the kind of work I think we all should do, and there were a bunch of kind of mechanisms and vehicles that I used to kind of get me to that headspace. It includes a lot of like motorcycle riding, I probably read more than I watch TV now. A lot of meditation. That was something I always thought was very woo-woo, and now it's something that I'm very much into and I try and do twice a day. And so I finally got to know who I was for myself, and I actually prefer to be alone a lot of the time now rather than, you know, out at bars and you know, networking events 4 out of 5 nights a week or something. I'm far more of a homebody with my plants and my books and my motorcycle.
So when did you, like, have you always ridden, or is this something that you discovered as part of this kind of, rebirth, for lack of a better term, that you were going through?
Yeah, a little both. So I would always jump on and off bikes. Like I say, I grew up in a rough part of London. So occasionally there was a dumped bike in the middle of the local park. And if you were lucky, you could kickstart it and get it started and ride around till the gas fella, gave up on it. But then I got, you know, I got a Vespa, very, you know, at the time, very metrosexual. You know, I was in my suit, I had my Vespa, and I would putter around into London and park it everywhere. But I never really formed a true bond with riding, or I didn't find the true emotional value until, you know, it was the only thing I had left. You know, I had that period of a separation when you're kind of by yourself, and I had the bike, and I genuinely fell in love with it in a way that you love a dog, you know, that you have a pet or something that kind of goes through a journey with you. And I was going through some very difficult professional and personal times, but I had this vehicle that was taking me through it, both metaphorically and physically. Because I was so busy professionally, you're just with people constantly. So I learned to ride a motorcycle to fuck off, to spend some time by myself and get away from people. The irony is, from escaping other people, I found myself. And I also found a group of people that I completely identified with. And a lot of the time, you know, and I think motorcyclists, or let's say bikers, I think bikers get a bad rap. You say the word biker, it already emotes some kind of, you know, leathery biker person, Harley Davidsons, and
yeah,
to use a brand that really, you know, has got some interesting things going on right now professionally. But I got to spend some time learning to love motorcycling and motorcycle industry and motorcycle people. And moto camping was a big thing. You know, I could now disappear with a tent on the back of my bike, go anywhere I wanted, stay anywhere I want, and yeah, just spend some quiet time alone with the bike and myself. And it just truly became a vehicle for personal growth. And, you know, I know you know, we both went through a program together, which we'll probably talk about. Personal growth is very important to me, and it never has been. And once again, I think because I took my luck for granted, I decided that, you know, the benefits that I saw personally, I really needed to do professionally as well, and kind of start blurring those lines, because I was at a stage in my life where my priorities had very much changed. I was very much focused on, I don't want to say myself in a selfish way, but myself in terms of, I want to be present for my kids. I want to be around for my family and the things that matter. If I'm going to make money, I'm going to do it for the right reasons, not because I want the Porsche, because I want my kids to be safe. You know, a massive amount of my outlook, my long-term vision had changed. And I'm still in it. You know, by no means is this and that's how I got to write this book on being... No, man, I'm still a fuck up. Like, but I'm a fuck up on a journey. You know, I'm growing, and I know I am because I see the benefits from it. But trying to live that growth existence in a life that you've built for yourself and an image that you've built, which is very much structured around other things that to some degree you don't want to be associated with anymore, is very difficult.
I mean, that resonates with me. I know it. I've talked to people about it all the time. We get caught up maybe in a little bit of our own success. And in your case, it was the pandemic that took all of that away and knocked you off course and knocked you out of your comfort zone. For most people, it's a diagnosis or the loss of a loved one or some sort of trauma that kind of makes them realize, okay, life is too short. You're going to have to change. If you ever think about what might have happened if the pandemic hadn't have happened and you would have just continued on the path you were on?
I do. I think about it a lot. I'd definitely be able to pay a lot more bills. I can tell you that for nothing. That's just a financial fact. But, you know, I think all of us have been affected by it financially in some way or another. I definitely think I would have fallen into some old traps and behaviors. I probably wouldn't have been afforded the time to do the work.
Right.
And I think that's the gift, you know, and I'll be blunt and say that in the worst possible fucking time of my life, and I've been through some doozies, right? My dad died when I was young, and I've had some interesting life progressions and journey, but I would definitely say the last 5 or 6 years have been the hardest years of my life. And I think a lot of that is because I was on that journey and on that path of success as we see it, right? I almost don't want to use the word success, because in hindsight, I wasn't. Like, I think on paper and to what other people aspire to wanting, you know, I had a lovely house, a bit of land. I had the things that you want. Everything was paid for. But I wasn't truly happy. And I also hadn't been given what I now see is the gift of getting to know yourself properly. You know, I left school at 16. I started working very young, and I was already on that. Okay, I've got bills now. So I never did the kind of gap year and found myself. What do I want to do with my life? I was just in my life.
Right.
And I think as entrepreneurs, we fall into that trap inherently. I think there's a very big difference between being in your business and being on your business. Like being able to look at your business from a top-down perspective and say, how can I improve this? Being in it and saying, okay, it's a busy day. You know, what am I going to do? I've got to get these tasks done. And I think we don't do that with our life. I think we're in our life a lot of the time, but we don't look on our life and see where are we within this very short frame of existence that we've got. We've got to this point now. Like, how are we going to live the rest of it out? And I think being able to have the gift of saying, okay, your life's fucking destroyed now. Like, it's on the floor. Which bits do you want to pick up, and how are you going to put it back together? In what image? And that's where I've been, is looking at those pieces, picking them up and saying, okay, how can I, in the most healthy way, take these forward on a journey that I want to be a part of? So, and that's the point where you pull your pants back up and you start walking, and it has to be in a direction that you choose. there's an opportunity in disruption. You know, we know that. But there comes a point where you have to make a decision on where you take that disruption.
Yeah, I talk to people about that all the time, and it is just such a paradox. It is virtually impossible to see it when you're inside it, when your life is on the floor and you're trying to pick up the pieces and it's stressful mm-hmm. and you feel like you've lost everything. You will eventually know that looking back on that time will be one of the most important parts of your life. But God, it's impossible to see at the time. And it's just something, I guess that's just part of the human experience. You're going to have to go through those shitty times and find a way to get through it.
You're absolutely right. And I think there's so much, there's so many quotes and, you know, bullshit terms that get thrown out. It is what it is. I used to think that was the biggest fucking cop out of it is what it is. Or this too shall pass, right? All of these things that we're like, oh, okay, I get it. You're fobbing off. Like, take some account. And, you know, similarly, and I'll be completely honest about this as somebody who spends a lot of time in the mental health space as well. I didn't truly understand what anxiety was or depression was. I thought that was something that other people had. And honestly, I thought it was laziness. Oh, what do you mean you can't get out of bed? Like, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm slogging away every day. No, man, it's context. And a lot of the time when you're in another bullshit, you can't see the wood for the trees.
Hey, it's Bob, and I'm taking the Growth Mixtape on the road in a series of keynote speeches inspired by the stories of my amazing guests. At their core, these signature talks are about how to get you and your teams off autopilot and stop settling for small incremental improvements. This isn't going to come from spewing business advice. My podcast is full of people that have done incredible things, and every one of them struggles with self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and the crippling fear of judgment that holds so many of us back. They've also found ways through it by rediscovering their creativity, their curiosity, and the confidence to do scary things. Imagine the power of bringing these vulnerable stories to life, live and on stage, to help you and your teams hit your targets, find your voice, and be the rock stars you are. Book me for your next event at bobmathers.ca. Now back to the show.
It's interesting because, Carl, when I follow you on Instagram, we'll talk about that with like, 120,000 plus followers. But you seem to have found this marriage of your passion and your business that so many of us are searching for. And as you just said, it hasn't been easy. It's still not easy. But how did you put those two things together?
So the social media thing for me, on one hand, comes very easily. On one hand, comes very difficultly. I've always done social media strategies for people, marketing strategies, brand strategies, identifying your pillars of content and, you know, what reinforces your narrative as a brand. All of these things that I've been preaching for two decades. When it came to going through the difficult personal time, I didn't want to use my personal Instagram account with the happy, you know, poster pictures of my family on there. And I said, it just didn't feel authentic. And I just needed something, honestly, a little bit anonymous and as an outlet to dump moody pictures of me camping, right? For want of a better term. But I also didn't have any money at the time. So I was like, well, it got to a point where I just wanted a bit of an outlet where I could talk about the journey that I was going through. So I put some mental health stuff on there. Nothing too moody. I'm also a brand guy and an image conscious guy. So I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm depressed. Look at me on my motorcycle. But I put out some content that other people, I think they genuinely identified with as a bit of, I'll use the word, I was being authentic to myself. I wasn't oversharing, but I was saying, listen, you know, everyone goes through some difficult times in their life. You know, I'm going through a difficult time right now, but I'm also having a great time finding myself on this little journey that I'm on. My Instagram account is actually Zen Motorcycle Maintenance because I was reading the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance again when I was out and I wanted to create this account, right? I was like, what do I call it? Oh, well, I'm reading this book. Like, I'll use this. But there's you know, some interesting things within it because there's a lot of mental health components to the book. They have this thing called a Chautauqua, this journey that the rider that the the author is on. And I found myself on my own little journey and then using social media as the kind of conduit to be able to put some of this out. So it really started out as just photos and some text. But then as people started interacting with it more, and it was of people that were just genuinely, they just seemed like genuinely good people. A lot of them were other motorcyclists that I identified with getting away. Oh, how great it makes you feel to be on a motorcycle. So I started doing some research on it, and I found some great research pieces very early on, and just like looking at the different chemical changes that take place when you ride a motorcycle. And I found that, you know, when you ride a motorcycle, it releases dopamine, you know, which is that kind of feel good reward chemical within your brain. And then, you know, the endorphins go, same thing. It's a natural painkiller. So if you're stressed or you're having something, like your body starts reacting positively to the act of riding. So I started finding these great kind of articles and research pieces from all over the world. So I started putting more of that content out, and people were like, holy shit, this validates the whole thing. And just kind of started growing from there. And I started working with brands at that point. They started reaching out, and, you know, I could now have a company sponsor my tires, you know, put tires on my bike. And I was like, oh, wow, this is great. You know, I'm doing the things I love and I enjoy, and I'm not having to pay to maintain my bike or whatever it is. And I was fortunate enough to leverage the 20 years of marketing to say, okay, brand X, you know, what narratives or messaging are you trying to promote? Like, what are the relationships that you're building with your content creators and influencers? And what is the agenda? What are you trying to get from this? And then building kind of more authentic relationships, both with my audience, but with brands as well. And then translating the two and then sharing those together. So it's afforded me some incredible opportunities. Like, I'm now an official ambassador for Royal Enfield, who make motorcycles, and I get to go to product launches and, you know, ride incredible bikes in great places. And, you know, I just came back from Palm Springs and Joshua Tree, where I was riding a scrambler through the desert. And I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. I'm still broke, but I'm having great experiences and being able to do some cool stuff with cool people. And the other thing is, you know, on those trips, I'm also meeting other content creators that, you know, might have a very different take on what it is that they're doing, but we immediately bond over the motorcycles thing. We bond over this business of content creation. And yeah, it's a phenomenal opportunity. And, you know, I try and say that as humbly as possible, because I'm so thankful for the opportunity. And having the knock of, you know, jumping back into that, I was on stage talking about stuff, and I could talk to a room of strangers about any subject. Well, when you start doing the work and being like, am I happy with myself? Like, who is this person that gets on stage? So I lost a lot of that confidence, a lot of that bravery, you know, that connection between stupidity and bravery, you know, like I couldn't tell which one it was. So social media for me gave me a platform to practice that voice. And that's when I started doing a lot more actually talking to the camera a little bit more, which was unbelievably uncomfortable. So, and I still get uncomfortable when I do it. And I'm not shy about saying that I'm uncomfortable when I do it either, but it has got easier. But I'm now finding that place from the guy that would do that before to the guy that's trying to authentically do it now. And then find where I stand in front of the camera, right? How comfortable am I? Even something as, you know, straightforward as this podcast, like how comfortable am I in sharing my story? Because it shatters some of the strengths that I could use to sell myself before, you know? I figured, for want of a better term, Bob, fuck it. Like, this is me. Like, this is my life. I get to choose. You know, some people will hold that old image of you in perpetuity from the moment, you know, you had your last interaction with them. But that doesn't have to be the person that you are. And it certainly isn't the person that I am now. So I'm just trying to be a little bit more authentic to myself. But more importantly for me, my children are at an age where they see what I'm doing. They know what I'm doing. I want them to know that it's me doing it. Like, it's not a persona. It's not, it's their dad. And that's my job. above and beyond anything else. I could never have another successful job again. I'm a good dad. And because that's what I want to be. So I'll put all of my stock in that.
It's such a great, God, that's an amazing story, Carl. I mean, it's like a modern fairy tale, right? Because you've got this hero that's cocky and taken on the world, and then he gets torn down and is picking up the pieces. And so you approach social media not as a way to promote yourself, but just as a way to, as you said, like anonymously share your fears and anxieties and just have a safe place to kind of rebuild yourself. And it turns out it's taking you to a business and a life that you just could not have fathomed before all of that happened. It's amazing.
You know, it's funny you say it's like a movie. I can't wait for the next act. Do you know what I mean? That'll be great when the money's actually rolling in and everything's like, and the credits start rolling. Brilliant. Let's do. Well, I don't want the credits to roll in just yet. Hopefully I've got a bunch left to do. But yeah, it's a journey nonetheless. I'm just very lucky that I get to own my own channel now. You know, I'm not trying to do deals with somebody else to push an agenda or, you know, it's my social media. I can do whatever I want. Somebody pisses me off, I can tell them. I can swear on my social media and not worry about offending the brand's image. I can just be far more authentic to myself. You know, it's cool. For want of a better term, it's cool. It's literally this stage of my journey, and I can taste it changing. Like the other thing with being an entrepreneur and being kind of seasoned, good, bad, and ugly, is you know when the tides are changing, and I feel like I'm on the crest of something great. Like you're talking about the next act. I can feel it. I can taste it. I can sense it. I want to go into whatever that next phase is with the humble learnings and outlook that I've got right now. Like I almost want to live my life knowing that I can't pay my bills, because it makes you so much more appreciative. I'll say this from one man to another. I certainly have never cried as much for all of the reasons, Bob. The contrast of life is so unbelievable. The darks have never been darker, but the lights have never been lighter. I've never laughed as much for the right reasons. You know, and I've never appreciated the time I spend with my kids. Like the other night, you know, I took the girls out and we just went for a dessert. After dinner, we just went to a restaurant locally and we sat there and we just shot the shit and we laughed. And it was, I don't think, to your point, if I'd have traveled that original trajectory where I was just busy, I was at events, you know, I think I'd have a lot more babysitters in the house. I appreciate everything so much more. So I want to take that outlook for the rest of my life, man. I don't want the dark sides, light and as much, but man, the beauty in life has never been more beautiful.
God, I love that, Carl. When you talk about your kids, I think about that all the time, because one of the, you know, coming back to COVID for you, the question I always ask is it possible to have that kind of transformation without a COVID or a diagnosis or a trauma? Like, is it possible for people to get to where you are now without having to go through that person that had to break down and rebuild himself? And I don't know, because the only way I've ever seen people do it is through losing everything and coming back from it. But I do have hope for our kids. And I'm just very conscious, I think, in a way that our parents weren't, that you don't have to rush into this. You can slow down. You can, I don't know, you can just be more thoughtful about it.
Yeah. And I, you know, you probably remember your parents saying to you when you were younger, just appreciate being young, like appreciate your childhood.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying it, but I was also the kid that moved out at 16 to become a roof tiler, you know, because school wasn't going to be for me. And I wanted to grow up. I want to make money. I want to buy a car. Like, and I look at my kids now and I'm very lucky that we get to have some genuine conversations about the experience of life. And I think a lot of that is because I try to be as transparent with them about the difficulties that life presents without trying to scare them. We're very much a realist household. We talk about absolutely absolutely everything, man. Like, it's sometimes I feel like I'm living in an episode of like Family Ties or something, because like, because we sit on the couch and we have deep conversations about how do you think this affects your sister, like, or your brother, or, you know, this is how Mum and I talk on the couch when we're having a difficult conversation. We can talk through an argument for 2 hours because we're communicating. Like, on whatever it is, it's very much focused on the experience of engaging with each other. So when it comes to don't grow up too soon, man, like, that's... And I had this conversation with my partner, Dee, the other day. We were in the kitchen and I was on the verge of tears talking about my 10-year-old daughter. And because in the blink of an eye, she's gone from being this curly haired, rambunctious little 3 or 4 year old to this 10-year-old young woman who is like, she can now reach the top of the LRT, you know, and hold on. I'm like, holy cow, like, you're growing up so far, and it scares the shit out of me, Bob. Like, I look in the mirror every day, and I've got a beard now, and it's grey, but I don't feel like I'm changing. Like, I don't think I've changed over the last 10 years. And I look at this young woman who's gone from learning to count to performing gymnastics displays and having a genuine opinion and an outlook on her own life. And my God, I feel so lucky to experience it, but it scares me, dude, because I want to appreciate every minute I spend with her. There's a great song. I know you're a big music guy as well. There's this beautiful song called Daughters by a guy called Ben Rector. Great lyricist. Yeah, lovely, lovely song. But he talks about, as a musician, how his outlook completely changed. And like, he stopped booking gigs at radio stations so he could be present with his daughter. And I think, you know, until you get to look at your life and have that, what we talk about, that catalyst event, where you decide to say, okay. And some people have it, right? Some people are like, I'm going to have a kid and that's just going to be everything. I'm just going to live for my kid. And I'll be very honest. And I was so extremely happy to be a father, but I didn't realize what that entailed. And I only wish that I could have had the appreciation of the life that I had afforded to me and that I was within until I screwed up. But also, it's made me a better person. I'm certainly a better parent now. I'm certainly a better father with a capital F to my children, because I appreciate the privilege of what it means to be a dad.
Yeah. Wow. You know, as somebody that's got young kids, I wonder how you think about social media, your experience with it. You've been able to, you know, find yourself, find other people that you've authentically connected with. But how do you deal with the darker sides of it? Because everybody's telling me, Bob, you got to be on Instagram. And I'm just like, God, when am I supposed to find all this time? I thought I was I could take a picture of my lunch and post on Instagram. And now every post I see, yours are like produced and captions and productions, and I'm speaking. And it's like, my God, it's like a mini movie.
There's apps for that, Bob. There is a dark side to it for sure. And I'm a big conspiracy guy, and not even a conspiracy guy. I don't even think we can refer to that in the negative anymore. I like to get as many points of data and information as possible and then make my own decisions up. The majority of the content that I get is all positive. It's so rare, Bob, that I get something negative. And people talk about trolls all the time. I'm exceptionally lucky. Occasionally I'll have some trolls jump in. And I'll tell you when it happens. If I have a piece of content that goes viral or does particularly well, as the piece of content expands outside of your network, you're kind of, it's out of control at that point. So you do get the trolls jumping in, and there's more shit that gets said about it. And what I will say, because of the content type that I put out, mental health and the positive benefits of things, and sharing some aspects of my own journey to kind of be authentic, but more importantly for me, is so that if somebody else is having a shit time, they can look at my post and be like, well, it's not all unicorns and rainbows. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a pinned post at the top of my Instagram grid where I'm just sat on my motorcycle and I talk for about 5 minutes saying, you know, I am having a difficult time right now. And it is difficult to talk about it because it's me and it's awkward. But I feel I should share it because other people might be going through this thing. So the majority of folks that interact with my content are people that are on their own journey. And, you know, we're very lucky, and I think we should probably talk about in a minute, you know, a personal growth program that we were both a part of. And one of the benefit, or one of the beautiful aspects of it for me personally, was being able to strip off the glamorous bit of we're all in business and actually talk about some of the hard stuff. And then somebody across the screen say, actually, I don't really talk about it publicly, but I'm having a hard time with that. So with my social media, I get so many incredible, incredible DMs that are so personal and so visceral of other people's experience. You know, so I could get a message from a guy saying, listen, you know, I just lost custody of my kids. And, you know, I'm having an incredibly difficult time dealing with that. And I'm spending time on my motorcycle. And I feel incredibly privileged that people feel that they can share it so they're not alone. If we're honest with each other, all of us are going through something. You know, maybe your wife's sick. Maybe your dad died a year ago or 3 years ago and you're still having a really difficult time with it. All of us are on these incredible journeys that are so nuanced and so diverse, but we don't give each other the credit to acknowledge that somebody else is on a journey. You're like, no, that guy's a dick. Well, are they? Or are they just having a really bad day?
Well, a couple things about that, Carl. Yeah. So that those DMs that you get from those people, I got to believe that there's a good chance that that person doesn't have anybody else to talk to. But you also mentioned Vienna Waits, which is a program that you and I were both part of to really help people live more intentionally. And I found that too. And I honestly do share things on LinkedIn that my best friends don't know about me. And I've said things in that group that maybe my wife of 25 years doesn't know about me. And so it's interesting, isn't it, that we search out these other places to have these conversations that, you know, are the people that know us best in the world. There's something that makes it more awkward to talk to people that know us than perfect strangers.
I think it's interesting that the people that you meet, and it's always easier to talk to strangers than people you know. And I think that's the strangest thing.
Yeah.
I've been going to this motorcycle shop for years for parts, and I've always had a great relationship with them. And as a marketer, I said, you know, you should really create some opportunities for your customers to either interact with each other or have more of a hand on the motorcycle community locally. I mean, there's so many mutually beneficial reasons that you should do something like put in a coffee shop. So anyway, I went in, I think it was like last winter, and the owner, female owned and operated business, she said, okay, you're putting a coffee shop in over the winter. We're going to do this thing. So I've been going there and working from this coffee shop that we built, and it's great. And it's really nice. Like, it's a great coffee machine, really good Americano, just this open space, very, very simple. But what it's done is customers come in now and they're like, oh, I'll wait here while my tire's being done. What's your name? My name's Steve. And they start talking. You see these kind of interactions. And once again, man, it's the motorcycle. They already have the motorcycle thing in common. That's why they're in that place. So then it's like you immediately see them skip over that part after, oh, what do you ride? What do you ride? And then they're talking about personal stuff. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing, right? You guys didn't know each other, and now there's this conversation taking place. Okay, so this is the biggest fucking thing I learned. The biggest thing I've learned through all of this stuff the last 5 years, admit defeat. Admit defeat. You fucked up. You lost. Whatever it was is gone. Suck it up. Like, move on. And it's so difficult. So difficult, because we want to hold on to those tiny threads of getting it back, or it's all going to be okay, or yeah, you're fucking done. You're done. Move on. And it's an ego thing. And it's the hardest possible thing. It's the hard, because none of us want to. Because, you know, the big H word, hope. You know, if you admit defeat, where is the hope? You know, is the hope gone? No, it has a different shape. It has a different outlook now. You actually have the opportunity to build hope in an image that's attainable from where you are. And so that for me, that's the biggest learning for me, is admit defeat when you need to.
Man, Carl, this has been so awesome. I didn't know where this conversation was going to go. It went into some amazing places. God, this has been, you know, as you're talking, I do think back about that time that, you know, we met initially, and I'm just so grateful that, like, I don't think either one of us would have really gotten along with the other, or maybe we would have. We would have gone out and gotten partied in the bars and been idiots and acted like teenagers. Maybe we would have thought we've gotten along well, because I think we were both in very different places. But the way that the world, or the universe, if you like that term, kind of brings us back together with people, this conversation has just been a gift. It's just been, it's meant so much to me. It's been amazing.
Thanks, man. And likewise, you know, it's, you know, we talk about, you know, losing some old relationships, but the ones you build for the right reasons and, like, built around connection and identification, like, and I recognize you, man. Like, it's so nice to say, hey, Bob, you're a music guy. I'm a music guy too. Like, we already have that in common. So we must have other things in common.
Right.
But you start from a place of kind of authenticity and not, what can I get out of this relationship? Like, it's not about that anymore. And I think, yeah, man, I feel genuinely privileged to have interacted with you. And one of the irony is we were in completely separate groups in that program.
Yeah.
You know, to give them some absolute props, Whitney and Greg just did a great job of recognizing, oh, you're having something here. Somebody else is having something over there. If you guys get together, you could probably help each other out. And I think, and that's the beauty of connections, right? And the ones we build as adults, a lot of the time, are very surface level. We don't get to have these conversations, right? You don't get to say, there's a great, I'm trying to think of what song it is, but there's a lyric as, where does it go? Basically, it says, like, show me what hurt you. Mm. It's like, it's take me to your dark place. Right, so I can know who you are. I'll put the song in the comment. But yeah, I think once you start recognizing the fact that you're on a journey, and I think one of the nice things is we connected over an intentional place where we were improving ourselves, right, personally and professionally. So I think we already had that safe place that we could share some of this stuff, but. Yeah, it's been a privilege, and this is the first time I've ever done anything. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some of my story, but also, man, this is also part of my journey, right? Part of that therapy and some of that transparency, and because I can tell it's not easy, man, to take the veil off and say screw it, be yourself. So thanks, Bob.
Well, thank you, Carl. This has been awesome. I can't thank you enough. Hey, by the way, if people have listened to this and they're interested and they want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Well, easiest place, as we mentioned, Instagram. So Instagram.com/Zen Motorcycle Maintenance, like the book, not affiliated, but like the book. I love meeting people. I go to a lot of events. I'm doing a couple of speaking gigs this summer. I'm speaking at it's where everything kind of joins up. I'm speaking at an event called the Motocraft Show. motocraftshow.com, and then I'm leading a ride in Prince Edward County, so I'll be talking about how motorcycles benefit your mental health, and then we're going to go on a beautiful ride of PEC. But yeah, join me on Instagram, or, you know, LinkedIn's easy to find me as well. Just Google my name, I'm still on there. But yeah, thanks, Bob. This has been it's been a genuine privilege.
Amazing, Carl. Thanks so much.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.